Columbia Broadcasting System turns over the next hour to its documentary unit for a special program about baseball. The unit wishes to make a promise, and no other unit can make this claim. Stay tuned, and you will not hear the band play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Stay tuned, and you will not hear a recitation of Casey at the Bat. Documentary unit invites you to play ball, to join a fast-moving tour of that wonderland of heroes, hullabaloo, and high finance known as baseball. If you're a fan, here's a once-in-a-lifetime trip behind the scenes of our national pastime. If you're not, we hope this tour will make you one. But now, here is your guide, Columbia's Director of Sports, Red Barber.
Hello, everybody. It's the old redhead. And you know, we whipped up a clam bake here tonight, the like of which hadn't been seen since they pulled down the general store to make room for the supermarket. This will be baseball. The men who make the game, play it, love it. We're taking the great dream of every American youngster, the dream of playing ball in the big leagues. And we're going to watch, step by step, as that dream comes true for at least one of them, one typical American kid. Finding him wasn't easy. We sifted through the roster of every big league club, ran through hundreds of names and mountains of statistics, until one day we turned the page, and there he was.
Reese Harold H., shortstop, Brooklyn Club. Bats right, throws right. Height 5'10", weight 170. Born July 23rd, 1919, residence, Louisville, Kentucky.
Behind those cold statistics, we found a warm human story. We found Pee Wee Reese, a star and a symbol. To tell his story, we've gathered around the Cracker Barrel here in New York, Pee Wee himself, his wife, Frank Rickey, Leo DeRocher, Bob Considine, and Babe Ruth. We're going to hop, skip, and jump around the country to bring you the folks who knew him when he was a growing kid. Also, Commissioner A.B. Chandler, Hornace Wagner, and Rogers Hornsey, Clark Griffith, Ted McGrew, Harry Heilman, and Bill McGowan. And as you hear Pee-wee's story told by these real people and by dramatization, as you see just what goes into the making of a ball player, remember this. His story might well have been yours. It still may be your kid's. It's the way one American boy worked to make his great dream come true. Well, Pee-wee, now that I've sort of finished the warm-up, you move over here right close to the microphone and step up to bat.
I still wish I were stepping up to bat, Red, instead of this.
What's the matter, son? Nerves?
You said it. My knees are knocking.
Pee-wee, I thought ball players weren't supposed to have any nerves.
Maybe that's the first thing we ought to get clear, Red. Ball players have nerves, and they have families, income taxes, monthly bills, and worries, too. They're no different from anybody else.
Well, now, where would you say ball players come from?
Oh, no special place, Red. Anywhere.
You mean they're even born like anybody else? And not just hatched out on a farm?
That's right, Red.
Well, where were you born, Pee-wee?
In Kentucky. Akron, Kentucky. That's near Louisville, Red.
And I don't suppose, young man, that you remember the circumstances.
No, sir, I don't.
I suppose I'm the only one who does. I'm Pee-wee's mother. But down here in Louisville, I had Pee-wee at our home in Akron. When they first showed him to me, he was just like any other baby. He was soft, red, and he squalled like all the rest of them. You couldn't tell if he was going to turn out to be a butcher or a ball player. I guess you want to know where he got his name, Pee-wee. Believe it or not, it isn't because of his size. It's because when he won the National Marble Shooting Contest in 1932. He used a little shooter called a Pee-wee. That's how. Pee-wee's father worked as a yard detective for the Louisville and Nashville Railroad, and on a holiday, he loved to play ball himself. Pee-wee is good, but I tell you this, he'll never be the player his daddy was. I don't rightly remember when Pee-wee first began to show signs of being a ball player. Pee-wee had a little gang, and I guess it was with them that he first began to play ball. Dick Harrell is right here now. He'll be able to tell you more about that.
I'll sure try, Mrs. Reese. It seems like a mighty long time ago that Pee-wee and I were roaming the streets of Louisville and playing ball. Now Pee-wee's a big baseball star, and I'm a clothing salesman at Levy Brothers. But I've got no kick. I'm doing all right with a swell wife who just a couple of months ago presented me with twins. Back when Pee-wee was about 9 and I was 10, I was bigger, so I began to play with the big fellas before he did. Pee-wee would just hang around, dying for a game, while the gang would be choosing up sides.
Come on, come on. What are we waiting for, huh? Choose up. Stop it. You want me to choose up?
Okay, baby cat. Choose up side. Three fingers. I can just make three fingers on the top of the bat.
You can't. No, you can't.
All right, go on. I'll push the bat down your throat. I win. I pick Josie.
Rusty.
Charlie.
Fitzy.
Me. Come on, me.
You.
Okay, Carl.
Me. Hey, Dick.
Fatso.
Dippy.
Scratch.
Oh, Melvin.
No, Foghead.
Okay, a 9-inning game. Let's go.
Melvin.
Oh, I'm nuts.
Go on. Your mama's calling you.
Melvin, you come right over this minute.
Oh, Ma, let me alone, will you?
Melvin!
Oh, gee whiz. For gosh sakes. I'm coming. I'm coming.
Go on, your mama's apron strings, you sissy.
Ah, shut up, will you? Hey, that makes us one short.
So we beat these punks one short. Who says we can't do it, huh? Who says so?
Well, why don't you let Pee-wee play?
That's squirt.
Oh, I'll give the kid a break.
Oh, okay. Hey, you, Pee-wee.
Yeah, huh?
You want to play, run?
Who? Huh?
Well, do you?
Oh, sure, Stumpy, sure.
Okay, left field. And don't fall any rat holes. Get going, you guys. Get the lead out of your pants. Me, I'm pitching.
Let's go, go, go. Here we go.
Golly, it seems like yesterday, that first time Pee-wee played with the big guys. He was out there in left field. So far out, you could barely see him. But he kept up the pepper yelling, shouting, spitting on his gloves, and hitching up his trousers like a big leaguer. I guess we were all dreaming the same thing. We were out there on the sand lot, but our minds were somewhere in the future. Every kid with his own little dream.
Gilligan, now pitching for Chicago.
Beanie Goldstein, now batting for Cleveland.
Dick Harrell, now playing first base for Cincinnati.
The first real baseball Pee-wee and I played was when we were about 12 with a team called the Eclipse Juniors in American Legion Junior Baseball. I remember one day when we had a game in the schoolyard. A big rat ran right across the field. Pee-wee picked up a rock and let go. Even though the rat was moving at top speed, the rock got him square on the head. He always had a good arm. I guess that was one of the things that counted when he tried out for the DuPont Manual High School team. But Ralph Kimmel, the Manual High School coach, can tell you more about that.
I don't think I can claim too much credit for giving Pee-wee a berth on our varsity.
You remember, Dick, that Pee-wee didn't even come out for the team until his senior year. He was so small, only 100 pounds, it didn't seem like he could make the team. But once he did get out, any coach worth his salt could have spotted Pee-wee's natural ability. The year Pee-wee played with the DuPont Manor High School team, we won the city and state championships. And we did it mostly because we had a shortstop on our team who made up in spunk and ability what he lacked in size and bulk. The only thing I was glad of when graduation rolled around was that Pee-wee was going to keep on playing ball with the New Covenant Presbyterian Church team. I couldn't think of a better man to pass Pee-wee on to than my old friend here, Keith Sparks, coach of that team.
Pee-wee had a job with a phone company, but that gave him enough time to be our regular shortstop because all our games were either in the late afternoons or on weekends. That year, 1937, we won the championship, the Church League, of the Louisville Amateur Baseball Federation. Just before our last game, Hugh Powers and I tipped off the late Cap Neal, manager of the Louisville Baseball Club, and I had a pretty good prospect in Reese. He was in the stands watching. All right there in the pinch, Pee-wee leaned into a fastball and sent it up against the fence for a solid two-bagger. That was what sold Cap Neal on Pee-wee. The winner of the championship always gets a free trip to the World Series, so that year we all went up to New York. It was the Giants against the Yankees. I'm telling you that Pee-wee was absolutely bug-eyed at his first sight of the city. I remember when Mel Ott came out on the field. Well, my kids let out a whoop because he was their particular hero, and they dashed down to get his autograph. Well, who do you think led the pack? None other but Pee-wee. He hurtled over the seats, almost knocked the policeman over, dashing down through the boxes. I remember as if it were only yesterday.
Hey, Mr. Ott. Please, Mr. Ott, can I have your autograph, please, Mr. Ott?
Why, sure, kid.
I'm from Louisville. Are you going to hit a home run today, huh?
Louisville, why, that's a swell town. Here you are.
Oh, gee. Hey, guys, look at this. I got out his autograph. Hey, guys, look at it.
Hey, let me see.
Gee whiz, look at that.
Why, I just handed him a scorecard, and he put his name on it. And you know what? He even asked me where I'm from.
Yeah.
Why, we had a regular talk together.
Oh, hey.
He said he likes Louisville. It's a swell town, he says. What do you think of that? Oh, ain't he a swell egg? And he...
What are you, Mr.?
Hey, who's got my scorecard? Which of you guys has swiped my scorecard? Give me it back. You hear? Give me it back.
Boy, Pee-wee almost wiped up the ballpark with all of us until he found his precious autograph. I won't forget that. Another thing about Pee-wee I always remember is that session we had with Cap Neal a week later in the office of the Louisville Baseball Club. I went along that day with Pee-wee and his father. It doesn't seem like it was 10 years ago.
Hello, Keith.
Howdy.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Reese.
Thank you, sir.
Pee-wee, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Neal.
How do you feel about playing with the Colonel?
Well...
Maybe you will, son. Maybe you will. Of course, you're going to need a lot of seasoning. You know, a good ball player is like a good steak. Got to be seasoned just right. That so, Keith?
Reckon it is.
Well, now, I don't think we have to spend too much time on the formalities. I've got a contract ready here.
How much?
Oh, a right fair figure.
How much?
$65 a month.
$65?
How does that sound, Mr. Reese?
Well, what do you think, Keith?
I think maybe we're in the wrong office.
Why?
Well, I got an offer from Baltimore in my pocket.
How much?
$100 a month.
What? For a kid still on the sandlots?
$100.
Why, it's robbery. But... Okay, I'll match it.
$100.
Plus a bonus of $200 for signing.
Now, look here, Keith.
Baltimore will.
Okay, then. $200 for signing. Now, Mr. Reese, if you'll...
And 5% of the purchase price when this contract is sold. If it's sold.
No.
Well, come on, Pee-wee. We might as well go.
Why, it's a holdup.
What hotel did the Baltimore scout say he was at?
Now, wait a minute. Wait. Oh, what do I care? Chances of any club wanting to buy the contract are 1 in 1,000,000. Okay, 5%. Anything else you want, Keith? We've got a ballpark, you know. Maybe you think I ought to give Pee-wee the penis concession, too.
And now we are back in New York again with Pee-wee. And let's hold the phone for a minute. Pee-wee, that first baseball contract took your life and made it a part of the intricate, a part of the complex and the fabulous world of organized baseball. You were just like the thousands of other kids who every year push open the same gate. Sometimes I get to wondering how many of them really know just what they're getting into. This great big world of baseball with its laws and its life and its limits. Did you, Pee-wee?
Remember, Red, I was still a kid, only about 18. What Dad said was okay with me.
Well, what did you get when you signed that contract? And just what did you give away? Let's explore that subject right now. And let's put it up to the top man of baseball himself, to Commissioner Albert B. Chandler in Cincinnati.
Hello, Red. This is Albert B. Chandler, Commissioner of Baseball, speaking from the baseball capital in Cincinnati. Pee-wee Reese is one of an army of 9,000 young men playing professional baseball this year. Of course, Pee-wee is one of a more select group of 400 major league players who have reached the highest goal of ever sandlot youngster. The people of the country have great confidence in the integrity of baseball. We in baseball seek earnestly to deserve that confidence, to perpetuate professional baseball in this country to the point where it gave pleasure to the more than 60 million people who went through the turnstiles last year. It has been necessary to set up a certain number of rules and regulations. Every major league player, coach, trainer, and umpire, every major league club and official is bound by a pact known as the Major League Agreement and by the 50 major league rules. It is the duty of the Commissioner of Baseball to supervise the administration of these rules. Perhaps the keystone of the system that perpetuates Major League Baseball, that keeps the game at its high state of competition, is what is known as the reserve clause in the player's contract. This means that a player's contract is a tangible asset, which a baseball club can retain from year to year or can transfer to some other club. If this right did not exist, there would be little competition in baseball. The best players would gravitate to the richest baseball clubs, and the last division clubs would be greatly weakened. The waiver system protects the players' rights at the time of transfer. There is an annual draft and a limit of optional assignments, which ensures players of an opportunity to advance from the minor league clubs to the major leagues. There was inaugurated last year a pension program which is presently open to every major league player after 60 days of service. Over the years, a large percentage of the cost of the pension program is borne by the club owners. The uniform player's contract provides for a minimum annual salary of $5,000 per year for major league service. When Pee-wee Reese or any other boy signs his first professional contract, then he has taken his place on a ladder that can lead to fame and fortune. The contract Pee-wee signed and the organization of professional baseball as it now exists is assurance that the ladder will not topple while fine boys like Pee-wee Reese are going up.
Thank you, Commissioner Chandler. Well, now, Pee-wee, let's look the other way. When you're in the locker rooms and in the dugouts and you're away from the ballparks, do you ball players often talk about this baseball contract?
The contract is part of our business, Red. And ball players, like everybody else, talk business.
Well, I suppose right here then that we should ask the player for his ideas on the contract. But if we did, well, that would only be one man's opinion. But right next to me at the moment is Bob Considine. Bob is a member of that romantic profession, sports writing, and the biographer Babe Ruth.
Bob, like the rest of the sports writing tribe, spends all his life digging inside of baseball, traveling around with the players, talking with them, and writing about them. Bob, you know a lot of ball players, and you know them intimately. What's your idea of the player's slant on the baseball contract?
The commissioner's right, Pee-wee. You've got a good contract. Or at least it's a better contract than the one that used to bind ball players to their clubs. But I wouldn't say it's perfect. Some of us have written, and with some justification, that under the present management labor legislation, no civil court in the United States would uphold the legality of the baseball contract. But the rub is that without a contract like yours, the whole structure of baseball would collapse. That fact was officially recognized by the Supreme Court of the District of Columbia back in 1914, 5 years before you were born. The court decision referred to baseball as a peculiar calling. And the court wasn't kidding, Pee-wee. You happen to be the property of the Brooklyn Dodgers. You've granted the Dodgers the right to continue control over you indefinitely. On the other hand, the Dodgers have promised to hire you for only a 30-day period. If something should happen to you in the opening game, and believe me, Pee-wee, I hope the only thing happens to you is that you get 4 for 4, the club would be entitled, under this contract, to pay your salary only through the first month of its duration. Not that it would, but it could. Another thing, let's assume, since it is theoretically possible, that the St. Louis Cards develop a great urge to get you for their club, and they're willing to pay you 3 or 4 times as much as you get now. In almost any other profession on earth, you'd leave the job you've got and take the better-paying job. That's human nature, and commendable. But as a ball player, you aren't permitted to accept a better job. Also, theoretically, if you have a great season this year and you think you're worth more than the management decides, your field of resistance is a narrow one. You can hold out in the hope of striking a better bargain, you can work out a compromise, or you can retire from baseball. Perhaps all 15 remaining big league teams and hundreds of minor league teams would be delighted to hire you, but all would be restrained from hiring you. Because you see, Pee-wee, the club that owns your contract has a lifetime hold on you, and only they, not you, can make the move that would enable you to find work anywhere else in organized baseball. Yep, you're working for a monopoly, Pee-wee, but it's only fair to say that in recent years, it has taken on a more liberal and social conscious tone. You've gained a longer dismissal notice, a bit of added income for spring training, a share in the pension fund, and some say about where your club might send you. All in all, Pee-wee, your contract may have its extra legal aspects, but it's just about the best that can now be produced. If it were any less liberal, fellows of intelligence like yourself would turn to some other field of work, some other profession. And if it were much more liberal, the limited handful of millionaire owners would soon kill the goose that is not only laying golden eggs, but giving kids like yourself a chance to build up a fine nest egg for the business or profession you plan to embrace when, years from now, you put aside your spikes and gloves.
Well, thanks very much for that point of view, Bob Considine. Now, Pee-wee, back in 1937, you signed that first baseball contract, and you were in. You agreed to abide by the laws of baseball. Okay. What happens to a kid when he first joins a professional ball club, What happened to you?
I joined the Louisville club for spring training, Red. That was Arcadia, Florida, 1938. I got down there, I didn't know a soul. It was a pretty awful feeling, Red, I'll tell you. Mighty lonesome.
But, Pee-wee, didn't the other players, the veterans, sort of take you in hand and show you around and show you the ropes?
No, I worked my head off, Red, running, sliding, and shagging flies. But no one seemed to notice me until one day, I remember, I was hanging around the batting cage when Captain Neal came up.
Hey, you. Pee-wee.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Neal.
I thought I told you to get in that batting cage and hit.
Well, yes, sir, you did.
What are you doing here? Why aren't you hitting?
Well, he wouldn't let me. to kick me away.
Look, kid, you better make up your mind. You take orders from me, the manager, or from anybody else that happens to shove you around.
From you, sir. From the manager.
Then get over there and hit.
Yes, sir. Come on, Jake, get out of there. Cap Nielsen.
Didn't I tell you to beat it before?
I'm taking my swing.
Go on, go.
Look, Jake, I'm staying right up here and I'm swinging. If you just happen to get in the way of the bat, that's going to be too bad.
Tough guy.
That's tough enough. You might as well get used to it because I'm going to be around here long after you're gone. Now stand back. Okay, start pitching.
This is quite a kid, huh? Yes. Look at him, will you?
Career of a ball player like Pee Wee Reese.
Well, Red, it doesn't affect all players, but under the farm system, the chances of advancement, rapid advancement, are better. The ownership of and responsibility for minor league clubs throughout the country brings all players immediately under major league observation and instruction. Accelerates their promotions and cuts down the apprenticeship period of all of the prospective major league players. The farm system, so-called, is almost universal today. Even the larger minors are farmers. It is a part of the structure of baseball, and within a few years, the farm system will be the very foundation of the professional game. Pee Wee, as you know, came up from Louisville, a partly owned Boston subsidiary. Without the farm idea, Red, as you call it, it is a fairly safe assumption that Pee Wee would have been in the minors much longer than he was.
Well, Branch, just how did this farm system start?
Oh, frankly, the ownership of minor league clubs by major league clubs and the one that we started on was practically forced upon me. 30 years ago or so, with the St. Louis Cardinals, we were confronted with a perplexing problem. We didn't have a good club, and we wanted a better one, and it's a problem with which most people are familiar today. St. Louis was broke. We could find good ball players in the minor leagues, but the wealthy clubs would buy them for more than we could afford to pay. It was very clear that we couldn't depend, as other clubs could, on buying players who were finished products. We had to develop them. So in 1919, we made a modest beginning, Sam Braden and myself. We bought 18 shares of stock in the Houston club of the Texas League. You can see that the farm system that we started then was a matter of necessity rather than one that indicated any sort of superlative vision.
Well, now, Branch, as we're sitting here talking about the farm systems and about the fact that the high minor leagues are farmers, what would you say are the advantages of the farm system?
So far as the Brooklyn Club is concerned, I hope it guarantees us an adequate supply of competent baseball players at all times and for a long time. Not superstars, mind you, but players of dependable skill. The farm system, backed by a comprehensive scouting program, is really our production department, and we invest a considerable amount of money in it. We are associated to a greater or less degree with 26 or 7 minor league clubs. I say our primary purpose is to develop players for the Dodgers. But this operation has important residual values. With major league help, hundreds of cities in minor leagues all over this country are getting a better and more stable brand of baseball than they would otherwise.
Well, now, in your opinion, how long does it take these days for a kid starting in baseball to reach the majors?
Oh, it would vary in different organizations. I made a survey some years ago and it was 3.4 years. I would say between 3.5 to 5 years. But the Dodgers now are undertaking to reduce this by quite a while. I hope 1 full year. We're starting a school we have at Vero Beach, Florida. This spring, we will process some 700, 800 young men there. Many of them rated by our scouts as being potentially of major league ability. Our scouts look first for three things: speed, good throwing, and power in hitting. Size is of minor importance, and as you know, race, creed, and color are of no importance. It is my belief that many ball players in a Class C league of major league destiny, too, can run just as fast, throw just as far, and hit just as hard as he ever will do in the major league. Then you might ask, of course, what is the difference between a Class C player and a major leaguer? The difference is experience and poise and confidence and know-how. That is what a boy gets in the minor leagues. And he gets better training, and he gets it faster in a well-organized farm system.
Well, thanks, Branch Rickey. Well, Pee-wee, looks like you were lucky, weren't you? Because you never really had to climb up the long stripper ladder of the farm system. You didn't have to start down in Class D ball. You never had to take those long overnight bus trips. Didn't have to stop off at third-class hotels. Fill yourself full of hamburgers just because there wasn't a decent eating place in the town.
That's right, Red. I came right in the American Association. The league just one step under the majors.
Let's see, you were there two seasons.
That's right, Red. 38 and 39.
Well, Pee-wee, how did you move up into the majors?
You know how those things are, Red. Nobody knows less about them than the players involved.
That's true. You never know, do you, when you're playing down there on the field, just who's looking at you from up in the stands. When you're in the minors, why, any night might be a big night. The night that some major league scout may be watching.
I can tell you all about that, Red. This is Ted McGrew, and I'm cutting in from New Orleans. I won't forget the how or why of Pee-wee signing with the Dodgers, for it cost me many and many a sleepless night. You know, the Red Sox bought the whole Louisville team to get Pee-wee, and then they finally decided they didn't want him at all. Well, when the news first leaked out that Pee-wee's contract was up for sale to the highest bidder, I lit out for Louisville on orders from Larry McPhail to look the kid over. Red, I don't have to tell you what happens when a scout gets a tip like that from the home office. He just grabs the nearest plane or train or bus, ox cart, anything, goes a-racing. And sure enough, the minute I roll into Louisville, the first thing I saw was the last thing I wanted to see. Clarence Rowland, the head scout of the Chicago Cubs, and a half a dozen other representatives of major league teams. Well, Rowland and I tailed the club for over a month. Every day, Pee-wee showed us more and more. He had everything a scout looks for in a prospect. And the beautiful part about the whole deal, of course, Red, was we didn't have to wait around for Pee-wee to become eligible. Many of the time at the present day, you see a kid who is really hot, but you can't even approach him until he has graduated from his high school or his class has graduated. Well, as I watched Pee-wee day after day and he kept getting better and better, I knew we would have to act fast. Donnie Bush, incidentally, who is my very best friend, was then at that time the president of the Colonels. And he was in the hospital in St. Louis, a very sick fellow. But I wasn't waiting, so I wired McPhail and set out for St. Louis. Now, exactly how we went about getting Donnie's signature on the contract, well, you understand, Red, there are tricks for every trade, and you just don't go tipping your hand. So let's just let it go at this. We did get to Donnie. We did manage to get Pee-wee's contract for a measly $72,500 at that. In my book, it was one of the biggest bargains in baseball history.
Well, thanks, Ted McGrew. And Pee-wee, he's always been rooting for you, hadn't he?
Yes, he did.
Well, now let's see. Now you're headed for the big time. So it must have been a great feeling, Pee-wee.
Red, the only feeling I had was plain worry. Swell, I'd been brought up to the majors, but that was no guarantee of anything. I spent a pretty anxious winter, let me tell you. I just didn't know what was going to happen. Maybe I'd make good. Maybe I'd end up warming the bench. Maybe I'd just get kicked downstairs to the minors again. It was a big worry, and it lasted all winter. Maybe I wouldn't. How could I tell?
Listening to Play Ball, a CBS documentary unit program on baseball. And now for the final innings of Play Ball, back to Red Barber.
Hello, everybody. This is the old redhead again. Well, Pee-wee and I have been following his story. The story of as typical an American kid as you'll ever want to know. The story of Pee-wee's rise from the sandlots of Louisville through the minors until now he stood on the threshold of the big leagues. Millions of us have dreamed this story. Pee-wee Reese had almost seen it come true. So there you are, Pee-wee. Had a big league contract and a man-sized worry on your hands.
And want to get married, Red.
So, a lot depends on you making good, doesn't it?
Just about everything.
Well, let's see. When did you first join the Dodgers?
At Clearwater, Florida, for spring training. That was March 1940. I walked into camp, and I'll never forget it, Red. Like a steer walks in the stockyard. When I tried to pass through the gate, the watchman stopped me. I told him I was one of the Brooklyn players. He looked me up and down, but just wouldn't believe me. I remember how he grabbed the phone.
Hello. Hello. This is Hamburger at the gate. Say, look. There's a kid here who claims he's one of the team. Just a skinny kid. Well, I did. I told him to beat it, but he keeps arguing he's on the team. His name is Reese. Harold Reese. No. Him? You don't say. Well, I never would have believed it. Okay, kid, you can go in. But what do I tell the truant officer if he turns up?
Well, you know, DeRosa, I think this is where you fit right into the stars. Come on over here and tell us what Pee-wee looked like that first day that he finally walked into training camp.
Well, Red, he looked like a kid that's just been caught sneaking under a circus tent, plain scared. He was unbelievably baby-faced. He was so small and so slight that if we were playing a high school team and had put Reese in with the other eight kids, no one would have known the difference. When Reese came up, you remember, Red, I was doubling as shortstop and manager. After Pee-wee's first workouts, I told McPhail that I'd be hanging up my glove for good as soon as the kid had his feet on the ground. As an old hand at playing shortstop, I was in a pretty good position to judge Pee-wee. I spotted his distinctive style almost immediately. He stays close to the ground. You ever watch him when he goes after a grounder, Red? The way he moves along like a crab? He has a great arm and can get a ball away faster than any other shortstop in either league. I really believe Pee-wee is the best shortstop in baseball. Oh, it's true. Some of the other boys, Marty Marion of the Cards, for instance, may make more spectacular plays occasionally, but Reese is outstanding in every way, day after day. His specialty is going to his left. He's really spectacular making that play. He's had many tough breaks, as any player is bound to have. Oh, I remember especially the time we played the Cardinals in August 1941. It was a big series. We were fighting for the pennant. We had been saving Freddie Fitzsimmons for 11 days just to pitch this one game. Fitz and Mort Cooper were locked in a scoreless tie going into the seventh inning. Then one of those things happened. A fairly easy trickler went out Pee-wee's way, and he booted the ball. He also booted the next one. They were costly errors because the Cards took advantage of the opening and crashed through to take the ball game 3-1. It was a tough one to lose. The whole team was depressed. They filed into the dressing room like a gang of spanked kids. They dressed in silence. Nobody said a word. But as they left, each had a kind word for Pee-wee. You know the kind of thing. Tough luck, Pee-wee. Don't take it so hard, kid.
Poor Pee Wee never turned his head. He just sat in the corner with his head in his hands. He hadn't even made a move to take off his uniform. It must have been an hour and a half that he sat there. And all the time I was watching him. Finally, just as I was ready to leave, I decided to use different tactics on the kid. I walked over to him and said, "What's the matter with you? Do you think that's going to be your last error with the Brooklyn Ball Club?" He turned and looked up at me, and slowly a great big grin spread over his face. That was all he needed. Incidentally, we went on to win the next series with St. Louis and the pennant. But I kind of think that little bit in the clubhouse was one of the turning points in Pee Wee's career. Now Pee Wee's life was merging into the great stream of baseball. And baseball isn't the game today, or when I was in the lineup a dozen years ago. Baseball goes back almost 100 years. Organized ball, about 60 years. The game we play today has developed out of the lives, the work, the spirit of the old-timers. It was a different game in those days, Red. A mighty different game.
You bet it was, Leo. Mighty different game. I know because I'm Honus Wagner out here in Pittsburgh. I was playing ball before McKinley was elected president. Getting the game now is different. In my time, you got in not because the book said you hit and set percentage or somebody looked at your teeth and x-rayed your ankles or labeled you primers of beef or just plain cow. You had to be tough in those days to get in. You had to fight. And you had to keep a fighting because all the teams were fighters. That's the way it went. Players have changed, too. Back in the old days, they were rough, ready, and tough. Today, a crowd of ball players standing in the hotel lobby looks like a bunch of young businessmen or college boys waiting around for co-ed. Some of them even wear ties. Today, most of the players in baseball are in it because of a well-paying job. And the players of today are really smart. They get the money. When I started to play ball, my first salary was $35 a month for Steubenville High in league ball. $35 a month. Take a bath, boy. Makes twice as much in these days. Baseball is a big business now, and the player deserves everything he gets. It's just like I miss the old rough and tumble. Maybe it's because I never got civilized. In my days, the Indians were still scalping the trappers out west, not wearing silk pants for a night game in the Yankee Stadium. Well, Leo, that's the way baseball looks to a guy who's old enough to be Pee Wee's grandfather. Let me tell you, the game has changed. It didn't change a lot in the time when Pee Wee's dad was playing the game in the 1920s. A lot of guys around who can tell you about that.
I'll take a crack at it, Hollis. This is Rogers Hornsby in Chicago. I hate to gripe that the good old game ain't what it used to be, but it just ain't. Baseball, 20 years ago, was pretty much of a defensive game with emphasis on pitching. When a guy walked up to the plate, it was a case of let the batter beware. The pitcher could chuck anything he wanted to. But now, that's all done away with. The umpires come out to the game with four dozen brand new balls rubbed in a special brand of Chesapeake Bay mud to take off just the amount of shine. The old ball itself was a solid chunk of cotton twine covered by horse hide. You really had to lean into the ball. Proof of that is the fact that up until the coming Babe Ruth, the record total of home runs in the American League one season was 16, made by Sox Sebo of Philadelphia in 1902. When the ball was given a Clark center, the record rose to 24 in the National League. The big change came during the career of the mighty Babe Ruth. Ruth began banging the old dead ball into the stands for homers, and the fans loved it. They yelled for more. Every time the Babe pulled one into the bleachers, the attendance figures for the next game would rise like a yeast cake. Now, no one has ever admitted this, but right at this time, something mighty queer happened to the American League ball. It began to take off from the bat like a jackrabbit with a ramjet set in its basement. The day of the slugger had arrived. The jackrabbit ball made the punk of a guy who could only hit a dozen home runs a season. And so they figured he needed some help. They just moved the fences in nearer to the plate. All of these things added up to another great change. The boys began playing for the book rather than for the team. Fat batting averages began to pay off in next year's salary. Baseball began to use up more statistics than a dozen insurance companies. What a laugh. In my book, the only record worth keeping is the payoff column, runs batted in. Of course, I can't argue the fact that this new kind of baseball is bringing in the new customers about three times as fast as the old. It's what the public wants, I guess, and it's the business of baseball to dish up what the public orders.
Horace Wagner and Rogers Hornsby, Pee-wee, seem to think that you're living today in a slugger's paradise.
Well, maybe we are, Red, but our club, the Dodgers, are going back to the old style of play. We run bases, play hit and run, and we've been stealing every base that isn't nailed down.
Well, look, Pee-wee, a lot of people think that you only get real spirit in amateur sports.
Don't kid yourself, Red. There's as much fight and spirit on a big league club as you'll find anywhere.
Well, I guess that would account for all the jockeying that goes on between ball clubs, all the razzing and the name-calling. By the way, how do you take that, Pee-wee?
Just take it, Red.
Well, let's see how. You're up at the plate. Swing and you miss. And from the other bench...
You really look great on that one, Pee-wee!
So you swing again, and another miss.
Hey, Pee-wee! I'd like to have nine guys like you to pitch to!
You're out in the field. A hot grounder comes your way, and you dive for it. And it takes a crazy hop. And you lunge for it, miss it. And from the stands...
Hey, Ray! Take the road, you bugger!
Well?
What about it, Red?
Well, Pee-wee, how do you feel when they holler things like that at you?
I didn't hear anything, Red.
You didn't hear those voices?
Never hear them. You want to stay in the major leagues, Red, you can't have rabbit ears.
Rabbit ears? Why, Pee-wee, you're getting to sound like an old-timer in this business. Hey, but at that, you have been up quite a stretch, haven't you? 8 years.
Less than 3 I spent in the Navy, Red.
Well, look, is there any one ball game, one moment that you remember, Pee-wee, that you think marked the point that you passed from being a rookie into an established, tested big leaguer?
No, I don't think so, Red.
Well, maybe you don't, Pee-wee, but I think I do. I was lucky enough to be broadcasting the ball game at the time. I remember you'd been hit with a pitch ball out in Chicago back in the 1st of June, 1940. That was your first year with the Dodgers. You were hurt pretty bad. They carried you off the field, and they kept you in the hospital for a week. Of course, we all wondered whether after that that you'd be gun-shy and stepping in the bucket. And it was 3 weeks before Leo had you back in the lineup. It was Ebbets Field, June 20th, 1940, against Pittsburgh. A lot of folks in the stands. Everybody watching. And everybody wondering, could you do it? Could you come back from being beamed? First inning, you hit a smashing single to right. Then the third inning, a long, towering fly ball to deep center. Fourth inning, a double to left. And the fifth inning, that was a real payoff. Pee-wee, I can see it now. The wind-up, the pitch, the sharp rifle-like crack of the bat, and that ball sailing deep out into center field. And I can see you flying around those bases, around first, coming around second, and that slide into third. Pee-wee, that did it. From that day on, son, you were in the major leagues to stick, hardhead. Then, you were just a kid. But now, there isn't a baseball fan in the country who doesn't know you, Pee-wee Reese. And yet, they really don't know you at all, do they? Yes, they see you in a uniform. But not as a guy with a wife and a baby. A little apartment in which you take off your shoes at night, put on your slippers, and probably fall asleep on the couch reading the sporting news the baseball paper. We'd like to see that part of your life right now, Pee-wee. So how about stepping over to one side? And let's bring in your wife, Dorothy, for a spell.
May I introduce her, Red?
Sure, Pee-wee.
Ladies and gentlemen, the better half of the Reese family, my wife, Dorothy.
Hello, Red. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Miss Reese. Look, what's it like to be married to a ball player?
Well, Red, we live two lives. During the winter back in Louisville, we live quietly in a little four-room apartment. But at the beginning of the season, it changes overnight. Barbara, our little girl who is four, and I come to New York and the rush begins. Like now, here we are. The season starts for Pee Wee Tuesday, and we're still homeless. We're still not settled, and I don't know when we will be.
Well, Miss Reese, is it like this every year?
Every year. We have to find a place to live. Barbara has to make new friends, and we live more or less like goldfish. We never know what time of the day or night the bell will ring, and there'll be some youngster wanting Pee Wee's autograph. Or some fan wanting to know if Pee-wee remembers what Casey pitched to the last man up the day before. Things like that. But the fans are wonderful. They really are.
Well, now, do you all get to go out very much?
When Pee-wee's in Brooklyn, if they're in the night game, sometimes we get in a movie. Usually we call the day about 11, have a dish of ice cream, and turn in.
Well, now, Miss Reese, what do you do when Pee-wee's on the road traveling with a ball club?
Oh, nothing much, Red. We sit at home and sew and do things like that. But, of course, there's always the radio and your broadcast. You know, you're a special messenger between Pee-wee and his family. Maybe Barbara knows your voice better than her daddy.
Thanks. Well, now, look, still in all, you're pretty happy, aren't you?
Yes, Red, we're very happy. But we know baseball, and we haven't any false ideas. It doesn't go on forever. We know how it is, how a player seems all set in one spot. He has his family in a nice home, his children in school, and suddenly he picks up the paper and finds he's been traded to a team in a city 1,000 miles away. It happens all the time, and there's nothing to do. Just pack up and go. There's no sense of security, ever.
Well, actually then, Ms. Reese, a ball player's family lives under the constant shadow of, should we say, two unknowns. Two fears, two great worries. He never knows when he gets up in the morning whether that day may find him packing for some other city, some other club. And then later, any day may bring the final word, the last word that he's finished. About that first possibility, Ms. Reese, being traded. Few people in baseball are as much a master of the trade as Clark Griffin, president of the Washington Senators. So let's see what he thinks about it.
Over a period of 60 years, I have traded and sold innumerable players, both good and bad. Many of us in baseball have been criticized for the trades we make, especially if they turn out sour. But in the long run, I would say that both the clubs and the players benefit. Many a good ball player gets stale playing in the same town too long, and he welcomes a change as well as the public. For example, last year, Harry Walker of the Cardinals was traded to the Phillies and ended up leading the league in hitting. Dutch Leonard, the Washington pitcher, was traded to the Phillies, came back to be a star. And it's not hard for many of you to recall my trading off the famous Joe Cronin, who happens to be my son-in-law, when he was leading the shortstops in the league a few years back. He had a chance to become a manager for a great town like Boston and to work for a great fellow like Tom Yawker. It was not a pleasant job for me to do, but it was certainly to Joe's advantage. Yes, trading is sometimes tough on a ball player and his family and often boomerangs against the club owner. But the fact is that trading is one of the most important phases of the game. Without it, you just couldn't have baseball. I think the players realize that fact. They know it's part of the game. Ask one, he'll tell you.
It's true, the chance of being traded is one of the real occupational risks of baseball. But believe me, the real thing you worry about is that little slip of paper marked outright release. I got mine, and so I know. This is Harry Heilman. I'm cutting in from Detroit. and I'd like to talk about Mrs. Reese's second fear. If you ask me, the biggest mistake a ball player can make is to think that the game owes him a living. It doesn't owe him a button. He gets paid well for his playing time, and as far as I can see, that's right and enough. That doesn't mean the pension plan and players' funds are wrong. No, they're dead right. But nobody is ever going to retire on what they pull out of the pension fund. If the players were wise, they'd use the swell opportunity they have while playing ball to study for another profession. But most of them never give it a thought. They just think they've got another year, then another, and they try to escape reality by remembering that Grover Cleveland won a World Series game when he was 43, and that Luke Appling is still playing at 39. The peak of a career is just the beginning of the slide down the other slope, a steep, rough slide, believe me. What happens to ball players when they're finished? Well, let's look at the record. In 1928, when I was with Detroit, we had a pretty average bunch of boys. Here's what some of them are doing now. Ken Holloway is a farmer down in Georgia. Charlie Gehringer is a manufacturer's agent in Detroit. Jack Taverner owns a bowling alley in Fort Worth. Johnny Noon is managing the Cincinnati Reds. This is a pretty good cross-section of those I know about, and they're doing well. But it's the fellas you never hear about that makes you wonder. They just kind of fade from the scene, get swallowed up in the great void of the unnoticed, the forgotten, and maybe the failures. But that's not baseball's fault. It depends on the individual. If he's ready to plan the rest of his life, or if he thinks the world will always owe him a living because of his past.
Come along with us now to the point where the career of Pee Wee Reese enters a new chapter. That part of his story labeled The Future. We've come from Reese, from being a kid on the sand lots in Louisville, up into high minor league baseball. He's breaking into the majors and his establishment there as a star. Next week, this unfinished story will begin to unfold again. The curtain will go up on another season of baseball. Pee Wee will be right out there on the field between third and second base. And you folks will be sitting up in the stands. And the press boxes will be filled. We'll all be waiting on one man, and one man only.
And I'm that man. For 23 years now, I've had the job of getting the game underway. Players come, players go. Seasons start, seasons end, but nothing ever happens on the field without me. I'm an umpire. My name is Bill McGowan. A pitch isn't a strike or a ball until I call it. A hit isn't fair or foul until I call it. A player isn't safe or out until I give the sign. Baseball couldn't exist without the umpire. Do you think a ball player's life is tough because he's away from home half the season? Well, I'm an umpire. He's away from home all the time. We never know where our next assignment will be from one series of games to the next. And it's a lonely life, believe me. We travel by ourselves, and most often we stay in different hotels from the ball club. But we umpires wouldn't change our jobs for any in baseball. We're proud of our work and proud of the fact that in the history of the major leagues, there has never been a hint or suspicion against the honesty of an umpire. Next week, I'll be out at the ballpark. It'll be crowded, of course. The flags will be up. The photographers will be getting their pictures. Groundkeepers will be putting the finishing touches to the field, whitewashing the foul line, the bag, smoothing the dirt around home plate. Both managers will come up with their lineup. The band will play the national anthem, and the American flag will be raised. And then the game goes on. Play ball!
Documentary unit has presented Play Ball, a special broadcast on our national pastime. Your narrator was Red Barber, CBS Director of Sports and Brooklyn baseball announcer, who next Friday, April 23rd, also launches CBS Television's 1948 coverage of the Dodgers from Ebbets Field. Heard on Play Ball from New York and throughout the country were Pee Wee Reese, his mother, Mrs. Emma Reese, Dick Harrell, his boyhood chum, Ralph Kimmel and Keith Sparks, his first coaches, Commissioner A.B. Chandler, Bob Considine, Ranch Rickey, Ted McGrew, Leo DeRocher, Honest Wagner, Rogers Hornsby, Dorothy Reese, Clark Griffith, Harry Heilman, and Bill McGowan. The broadcast was concluded by Babe Ruth.
Play Ball was written by Irv Tunick, directed by John Dietz, with a musical score composed and conducted by Merle Kendrick. This special broadcast was produced by Sam Abelow of the CBS Documentary Unit. Judson Bailey and John Durr of CBS Sports assisted.